We Aussies are the biggest losers in the world. $32 billion a year lost to the horses, the dogs, the pokies, casinos, footy matches, and more than likely two flies crawling up a wall. And we don't like it. We overwhelmingly want the gambling industry reined in. We want gambling ads banned. We want limits on the amount pokies can swallow. We want kids absolutely protected from gambling. And inquiry after inquiry has backed those ambitions. But, and it's about the most emphatic but in Australian politics, nothing much happens. It suits the system for us to go on losing. Which brings me to Hooked, a new book by Quentin Beresford, journalist and now adjunct professor at the University of the Sunshine Coast. Hooked, Inside the Murky World of Australia's Gambling Industry. Quentin joins me now. Quentin, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, David. Glad to be on the program.
Your book promises to answer how big gambling became too big to fail and too powerful to adequately regulate. Let us attack the question. Firstly, why, after, you know, all the big issues that you've taken on as a journalist over the years, you know, WA Inc. and Tasmanian Forestry, why gambling?
Well, look, I mean, as I describe in the introduction to the book, and I won't go into it in detail, 10 years ago, I was sitting down with my grandson to watch the footy. He was 8 at the time. And I hadn't known that a High Court decision had come down, which basically paved the way for the national online gambling market and the tsunami of ads. And I turned the telly on quite early before the game. We were sitting there and we just got assaulted by one inane gambling ad after another. And I looked across at my grandson and he had this, you know, this look of quizzical misunderstanding on his face, and I couldn't give him an answer. And, you know, that why, you know, a kid would be subjected to an onslaught of gambling ads when he was sitting down with his grandfather, or indeed plenty of kids sitting down with their families to watch the footy.
And we're having this discussion in the shadow of interesting developments in the United States, where sporting teams appear to have been, shall we say, torn apart by the needs of the gambling industry. Have you been following that?
I have, and I think that we're probably sitting, David, one day on the cusp of a similar scandal. If you think about it, kids in Australia these days are subjected to a million gambling ads a year. They're all focused around sport when gambling companies know that they're going to be watching with their parents. And when some of them get to become elite players and they get into their respective clubs, they effectively have to be deprogrammed. Now, we've had a few scandals around soccer and football in Australia. But yeah, look, a similar scandal could come here because the big football codes have got into bed with the gambling industry in a way in which they have now become dependent on it.
It's so easy. I mean, if somebody out there can bet on whether a player is going to get is going to be thrown off the field in the first quarter, they can get themselves thrown off the field in the first quarter. I mean, it's just dead easy. Why does anybody venture money on it?
Well, look, I, you know, you're asking a question about why gambling is culturally important to Australians, and indeed, of course, it's across the world and across civilizations and across time. We just have to accept that gambling's a part of instinctive human behaviour. What we failed to do in Australia is to apply a harm minimisation approach to it. What we've done is we've allowed this industry to develop into such a mega industry that's, you know, devouring communities and effectively taken over sport and indoctrinating our kids.
Do you believe that old saying that gamblers are addicted to losing?
Look, that's an interesting question. I can't profess to be to have the insights of a psychologist, which clearly I'm not, into the whole world of gambling, but I do understand that people can be very, very vulnerable to entreaties to gamble, and certain gambling products are very, very psychologically attractive to people. Now, take poker machines, for instance. It's well known that poker machines made in Australia are among some of the most addictive in the world. Australian poker machines are known throughout the world to be what's called high-intensive machines. That is, they will attract players to bet more and bet longer. So, and we know that, as you mentioned before, football were these senseless, endless iterations of gambling opportunities. If you promote those endlessly through advertising, David, you will normalise it to a certain market, and that's what's happened.
Yeah, yeah. Now, look, earlier when you were mentioning your grandson, you said that you were looking at a footy game with him in the aftermath of the High Court case that had opened up gambling's fresh opportunities across Australia. Let's go to that case. Tell us about Betfair versus WA.
Yeah, look, it's just such an interesting case because Western Australia, 2007, amended its Gambling Act to prevent interstate online gambling companies from establishing business in Western Australia. And that was, looking back, an incredibly courageous thing for a state government to set out to do. But WA has an interesting history of taking gambling harm seriously. In the 70s, WA banned poker machines in the community, allowed them in the one casino in the state, but banned them in the community, and successive governments have maintained that, such that banning poker machines in Western Australia is a badge of pride for that state, and good on them. So British gambling firm Betfair took the WA government to court, to the Supreme Court, the High Court, sorry, in 2008, that this was a restraint on trade between the states under Section 69 of the Constitution, and they won. And I guess it was a pretty open and shut case when you look at the Constitution. But what that did was that it opened up the national market for online gambling, and what happened pretty quickly is that big international online gambling companies flooded into Australia. There were about 30 of them came here, and that in turn encouraged gambling companies to flood the airwaves with these pro-gambling ads to justify the business model. And it was commented at the time that Australia had become a kind of wild west of online gambling. And at the same time, you have these massive changes in technology where smartphones get released onto the market in 2007, 2008, which became virtually a casino in your pocket. So you got the national market, you got 30-odd big gambling companies descending vulture-like into the country. You've got almost no regulation about how they operate. And not surprisingly, Australia becomes one of the earliest and biggest uptakes of online gambling in the world.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I am talking to Quentin Beresford about his new book, Hooked, about the gambling industry in Australia. Quentin, you make the point very strongly in your book that this is a Labor Party story. Explain.
Well, I think the Labor Party has historic ties to the gambling ecosystem, if I could put it that way. That is, Labor has had long-standing ties, particularly in New South Wales, to the hotels industry. And it was Bob Carr, then Premier of New South Wales, that released 30,000 poker machines into the communities, which went into pubs. Other state governments followed. Labor Party, of course, historically represents many seats in Western Sydney. And it was in Western Sydney that had the big leagues and RSL clubs that were stacked with poker machines. Clubs New South Wales becomes a very powerful lobbying body, so Labor's linked to them as well. And so Labor has these traditional ties. In fact, the Labor Party owns several clubs in Australia with poker machines. So poker machines are generating income to the Labor Party, and that seems to me quite unprecedented and certainly unsavoury that a political party would have such direct financial links to the gambling industry, but that's it. And so, you know, when the first serious attempt at gambling reform happens under the Gillard minority Labor government in 2010, you see Labor wobble terribly over the attempt by Andrew Wilkie, the independent member for the federal seat of Denison, to strike up a deal with Gillard, using his leverage to support the minority government. And that went down in an absolute blaze of vested interest politics run by the gambling industry. And it sent out this chill effect, I think, across the political system that you take on the gambling industry in an attempt to rein it in at your peril. And that's effectively where we've landed today.
Let's go back to the Gillard situation, because the weight of that story, some people might have put it out of their minds. Gillard would not have become Prime Minister but for Andrew Wilkie agreeing to back her. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. The election delivered four independents. You know, she needed a few of them to form a government. Wilkie was the first that signed on. And, I mean, I interviewed Andrew for the book, so his very interesting story about how all this fell apart is included in the book. But in brief, people remember Andrew Wilkie, of course, as the whistleblower on the Iraq War, the intelligence officer
who
blew, you know, the confected story around weapons of mass destruction. And then he decided to stand for federal politics. He wasn't particularly drawn to the gambling issue, but the northern suburbs of Hobart are effectively a ground zero for poker machine social damage because of the concentration of machines there owned by federal hotels. And as he explained to me in the book, when he was, you know, door knocking and walking in the electorate, he was approached by people who would tell him the horror stories that had happened to them or their families, you know, hooked into these rapacious poker machines. And so he made poker machine reform front and centre of his campaign, in fact became known as the pokey candidate. So when a minority government was delivered to Gillard in that election, Wilkie seized his opportunity. And so basically the deal he put to Gillard was twofold. One, maximum $1 bets on poker machines. Now that was taken very quickly off the table, because it threatened the interests of Crown Casino and the hundreds of poker machines they've got down at South Bank and elsewhere. And the other proposal was an interesting one, which was mandatory pre-commitment, a clunky term for the fact that poker machine players should be able to set upper limits on what they're going to spend. So the idea was they wouldn't chase their losses. They wouldn't get into the zone of gambling. And when losing a lot, think, oh, you know, the next spin, the next half hour will deliver the jackpot. It was designed to prevent that. It was an important but modest proposal. And just stand back a bit and have a look at the industry at that stage. So as I've said, in the 1990s, state governments released 200,000 poker machines into the community. Australia had the unenviable reputation of having 25% of the world's poker machines, with 0.5% of the world's population. 2011, it was established that there were 600,000 poker machine players and they were delivering $15 billion in gambling profits. So you can see that any attempt to limit these profits, there was just big, big money at stake. And, you know, Gillard herself was, I think, ambivalent about the reform for reasons we've discussed. You know, she's part of Labor culture and its historic connections to the gambling and hotel industries. I mean, some would say that she was never really on board with it. It was just, you know, practical politics, just what you had to do. I mean, she's written about it in her memoir, which I've quoted in the book, so she has her own version of this. And she'd spoken about knowing the damage that poker machines were doing in her own electorate. And of course, she, you know, like a Labor politician, she seemed to think that she was a champion of the less well off. But basically what happened is that the gambling industry went on a warpath against mandatory pre-commitment. They unleashed this massive advertising campaign that turned the proposal into a culture war. That mandatory pre-commitment was depicted as taking a, you know, an axe to your freedom of choice.
Yes.
That MPC, as I like to abbreviate it, was depicted in this advertising onslaught as a license to punt, and a license to punt was un-Australian.
Quentin, who were the allies of the gambling industry in that onslaught?
Well, many. No, so you've got the huge New South Wales club industry located in not only in Western Sydney but in regional towns. You had the big casino operators, you know, owned by the Packer family and others. You had the Hotels Association, you know, because Bob Carr and other premiers had unleashed all these all these poker machines into hotels, and hotels, you know, their business model had been effectively revived. I mean, the music went and the clank of poker machines replaced them.
Yep.
And also you had the football clubs, because poker machines went in en masse into NRL and AFL football clubs, and the clubs had become very quickly dependent in their own minds on poker machine revenue. So,
And Quentin, newspapers and television stations who were arguing, and maybe there was, you know, something in it, that revenue from gambling advertising was keeping them afloat.
Yes, that the deals with television stations were more in their infancy at that stage. They were certainly there.
Right, so that grows.
There's an arms race in it. It was certainly there in 2011. There were deals done between TV stations and the football codes for the broadcast rights. They were there, but they were, by comparison today, when they're worth billions, they were then worth millions. So they were certainly there, and they had their vested interests. So basically, Wilkie was taking on the power edifice of this country. That's what was at stake. And, of course, Labor was on the run a bit because of the scarring it had received only a year or two previously, when the mining campaign unleashed its advertising campaign to knock off the so-called resources rent tax. And Labor was in kind of shock about all this, that what that signified was that we can look back now and see that as a new era of Australian politics, when corporations set about to become active political players in the system. So that was the context of it. And the campaign was unleashed. I mean, James Packer was at the centre of it. He was quietly lobbying MPs. And he hired Carl Bitter. Now, many of your listeners, I suppose, might have heard of Carl. Carl was longtime Secretary of the New South Wales branch of the Labor
Big
Party.
Big figure in the Labor Party.
Big figure in the Labor Party. I mean, you know, to give him his due, he was well-versed in the dark arts of politics. And Packer hired him, not because he needed people to open doors. Packer could open plenty of doors on his own. Bitter was hired to run a marginal seat campaign directed at vulnerable Labor Party members who were sitting on small margins. So you had him lobbying MPs in the corridors of power. You had this massive advertising campaign that turned this modest but serious proposal into a culture war. And you had a marginal seat campaign. And the politics of it just fell inevitably to the defeat of this, and it resulted in Gillard flying down to Hobart and telling Wilkie that the deal was off. And Wilkie was understandably scathing, because he thought he had a rigid, solid deal with Wilkie, and he turned on Gillard, and they became, you know, sort of implacable enemies.
Quentin, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of the situation in the United States of America. Overwhelmingly, voters in the United States want the arms industry reined in. They want it regulated. They want this sort of wild shootings and things to stop. But nothing ever happens. And the similarity seems to me to be the huge amount of money that can be spent on political campaigning.
Yes. Look, this is the gambling industry is most in Australia is most often linked. I think Tim Costello first struck this analogy, and it's a very appropriate one, I think. The gambling in Australia and the power it deploys is most like the National Rifle Association's power in America to protect, you know, those terrible escalating gun law rights in the United States. And yes, it's the capacity in recent decades of corporations to directly undermine the public interest that lies at the heart of a democratic system, that, you know, for all its flaws and all its complexities, at the end of the day, a democracy is designed to protect and further the public interest. Now, of course, that's a tricky one in relation to gambling, because it's legal. As we said before, it's probably an inherent part of the human behaviour, but if you allow it to grow in this industrialised fashion in Australia, you've got the public interest to recognise and to deal with. And that's where the system, like the NRA in America, the system in Australia has, in my view, and view of many people, let down the Australian public.
So I'm not saying Australia is unique in this, in the world, but isn't one of the fundamental rules of Australian politics that federal and state governments cannot stand up to huge amounts of money?
No, I think that's absolutely right, David. And of course, excuse me, people have been clamouring for years for effective electoral laws that will take big money out of politics. And we should note, you know, the recent efforts of the South Australian Premier to direct this problem. And of course, you know, the Albanese government's shown no guts in this space at all. And so we have a system where...
That's so strange. They've shown such courage elsewhere.
such courage on a number of fronts
to address difficult problems in our community
This has become a standard critique, hasn't it, of the Albanese government, that it lacks the fight for structural reform, particularly where there are big vested interests. And how big a problem you see that issue for Labor, its potent manifestation is in gambling. Because the Albanese government, 2023, was handed this amazingly bold, bipartisan parliamentary report on online gambling. So a bipartisan report's unusual, David. You'd know that from your long experience in journalism.
Yep.
At the time, Peter Dutton gave in principle support to its principal recommendation to phase out gambling ads. The public were clamouring for it. And the Albanese government drifted and drifted and drifted without any commitment to it. And it became very obvious that the government was going to let this unique opportunity for bipartisan reform to rein in the extravagance with which this industry has been allowed to grow. He allowed it to lapse, and it has gone silent in the federal government.
There's a lot of analysis given to political donations and who can and can't donate to politics. But I often wonder whether that's really where the focus should be. It's not so much the money that the gambling industry or the miners or various other big pressure groups in Australia can give to the political parties. Isn't the best measure the amount of money they will spend to attack them?
Oh, absolutely. So as we said before, you know, the combination of the mining tax campaign and the campaign against MPC really showed corporations that they could wield enormous power by getting their hands dirty and getting into the political system and using mass advertising to bend the political system to their will. So that's certainly part of the problem. But we also know, David, there are other unaddressed issues. The lobbying industry is out of control in this country. Plenty of people, you know, have drawn attention to that. And so in the gambling space, you've got politicians who leave politics. They go into peak gambling lobby bodies. They go onto the boards of the big gambling companies and they take with them their understanding of the system and, of course, their contacts. But we see too, David, a more insidious problem occurring in the gambling space, and I'm sure it happens elsewhere, where politicians are simply groomed. And this was revealed quite shockingly in an investigation a few years ago by the Financial Review, where it found in the lead up to the 2024 federal election, Michelle Rowlands, who was then opposition spokesman on communications, and indeed the opposition leader, Anthony Albanese himself, were found to be having secret meetings with the gambling lobby. I think it was with Sportsbet. They were being wined and dined. These were unaccountable. No one knew what was, you know, being said at these meetings, what commitments, if any, were being given. The expenditure on them fell under parliamentary requirements, so they were never noted on members' registers of interests. And if people like the Fin Review hadn't uncovered them, we would never have known. Now, we still don't know. In fact, what was said and undertaken in those meetings. And all I'm saying is that's just common, you know, that's just common ground these days. Politicians are being groomed by corporations in all sorts of ways. And, of course, it's been found out too that gambling companies give politicians tickets, you know, to concerts and sporting events and sit in the corporate box and all the rest of it. And that goes under the parliament, under the radar of the parliamentary register itself. So there's a whole range of ways in which our democracy is effectively being undermined, David, and being skewed. I mean, corporations, of course, are, you know, legitimate players in the political systems. Their voices, of course, need to be heard. They've got, you know, big interests at stake. You know, no one's being anti-corporation here, but what we want is transparency. That's what we need. We need to know what's being said to whom, when, and we need to end the rivers of donations that go into political parties with sensible legislation.
And what do you reckon the odds are for anything effective being done about the gambling industry in the next, say, 10 years?
Oh, look, I wouldn't be too pessimistic about that, because basically what's happened, you know, Andrew Wilkie, to his credit, was, you know, a lone voice for many years, and he'd take on the whistleblowers in the gambling industry and so on. But he's been joined now by these feisty independents, the clutch of them, and gambling reform is really among their key issues. So while the politics of it aren't running in favour of gambling reform at the moment, that could change. And by the way, we might just be another gambling industry scandal away from the government not being able to come to the table. I mean, you think of the problems that Crown Casino and Star Casino got into. You know, I think, five official inquiries into those two companies alone, David. So
yeah, they're still operating though, aren't they,
Quentin? They're still operating. Yep. They're still operating.
Even though they're not fit, the finding about one of them, I forget which one now, is not fit to hold a gambling license.
Well, that was Crown and John Spencer.
And yet, oddly enough, they're still doing what they've been declared not fit to do.
Look, they are. You'd hope that the Royal Commissions have cleaned the industry up a bit. The business model has taken a big dent, because the planes, you know, flying in high rollers from China, you know, have gone. And so the business model has come under significant scrutiny and significant reform. Now, you got to keep a watch on that to make sure they don't slip back into their dastardly ways. Look, this is not going away. There are a bunch of very dedicated voices for gambling reform. And, of course, I refer to Reverend Tim Costello, who's been in this place 20 years. And his organisation leads, you know, the campaign for gambling reform. And he's, of course, joined by researchers like Associate Professor Charles Livingston and others around the country who are dedicating themselves to this space. And public agitation, David, I think is needed. Yeah. The independents will be a force, and hopefully we'll get some action.
Also needed are books like yours, Quentin. Thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thanks very much, David.
I've been talking to Quentin Beresford, journalist and now adjunct professor at the University of the Sunshine Coast, about his book, Hooked, Inside the Murky World of Australia's Gambling Industry, published by New South. This is Late Night Live.